Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that talks about the things that you always wanted to talk about Star Wars, but nobody ever does. I'm one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he will be always, is John Mills. And John, I have a really important question for you.
What's your really important question, Matthew?
John, what is your favorite moment, your unexpected small treasure of a scene in Star Wars?
See, you know, I'm glad you asked, Matthew, because, you know, I think that there are a lot of places where you can find out somebody's favorite scene, the thing that speaks to them is, you know, Luke, I am your father, and, you know, those sorts of things. But the tiny scenes, I think, are what makes Star Wars so fun, so relatable, is that it has the tiny moments that you don't expect, that you know, they come up out of left field. And they, like, there's one in particular that actually takes me out every single time. And I actually go to it when I need, like, a good emotional recharge. And I'll actually listen to the music cue from it if I can't get to, you know, a place to go watch it or something like that. And it's from the escape from Cloud City. And it is when R2-D2 opens up the door while they're running away from the stormtroopers. And while they're running away, he turns around and he lays that smoke screen, and then he spins back around, and there's this beautiful shot of the giant cloud, and you see the shots come out of it as R2 is coming out. Like, I'm getting goosebumps about it, thinking about it right now. And he's coming out, and then it cuts to another overhead shot, and you see the shots hit the Falcon, and everybody's going crazy. That moment where R2 is coming out of that cloud, that is one of those little moments that, to me, is what makes Star Wars as a whole something that I can go. There is one moment like that in every single movie where I can go back to it, and that's what gets me. That's what hooks me. And for me, overall, of all six, if I'm looking for the tiny moment, not the big emotional payoff, that's the one that I go to. It's a perfect combination of heroism and music and visuals, and everything about it is just phenomenal. And I can watch that one little segment or listen to the music from it, and I am emotionally satisfied for the rest of the day. It's a magical thing. What would be yours?
Gosh, John, there are really just so many to choose from. But I was thinking that one of those small moments that really gets me every time is actually from episode 3, where Obi-Wan is, he's going after Grievous, and he's riding Boga, the, you know, that weird little thing. And I just, there's something about the way that when Obi-Wan, it's this tiny little scene, Obi-Wan gets off, you know, dismounts, and he kind of pats its head. And then he just stands there because he's looking down at where Grievous is, and he's just thinking and pondering. But the way that Obi-Wan affectionately pats its head, there's just something about that that, for me, you know, Obi-Wan being my favorite character, I love that scene because there's such a, you know, Obi-Wan doesn't like droids. He doesn't really like droids. He doesn't like flying. Obi-Wan seems to be much more connected with living things. Him patting that, you know, strange looking creature on the head just let me know so much about that character. And it was almost as if, you know, he's there alone, but he's got a friend, you know, and that friend is going to be with him till the bitter end of that battle. And that one little scene right there, you know, he gets off, he pats it on the head, and then he just does that great Obi-Wan rub of the beard as he's trying to figure out exactly how he wants to approach it. I just love that one little scene because it's quiet moment before every, you know, hell breaks loose and the battle ensues. I really love it.
Now, see, what's funny is I knew you would pick an Obi-Wan scene because Obi-Wan is indeed your favorite character. That's not a dig. That's not a knock. He's a great character. I love him too. So I think it's great that you picked an Obi-Wan scene. But what I think is also great about that scene, when you break it down, especially with what people complain about a lot of times with the prequels, is that is Ewan McGregor selling the reality of the Boga. Patting the creature, giving that affectionate touch, you know, good girl, you know, stay there. That is a real world touch, for lack of a better term, that makes you believe in that boga. You know, like he's not like Ewan McGregor is not outside of the scene and the effects aren't around him. He's interacting with something in such a way that even though it's not there, it sells you on it. And I, as you're describing the scene, I never really thought about it, but you're right. It is a really nice moment. And it really is very telling about Obi-Wan that he is the type, you know, he's the, in that scene especially, he's the cowboy who's, you know, petting his trusty steed, like, stay here, girl, while I go take care of business. And, like, that's a really cool scene. That's really neat. I like that.
Well, and I like what you said, because it also, one of the things about Obi-Wan from the prequels was Ewan McGregor's performance, because by the time he got to I think episode two, he was just fully fleshed out as the character for himself. Like, he felt really comfortable. And yeah. Then by the time you get to episode three, I mean, he is Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, you don't, when you see him on screen, it's not Ewan McGregor anymore. No, it's Obi-Wan. And so he had found a way to make peace with the fact that he was making a film that, you know, Ewan hadn't really done other than Star Wars. And like you said, selling the reality of the unreality is what makes for a good actor in general. I mean, that's what they're supposed to do, whether they're on a stage with real sets and real props and everything, or they're on a complete green screen and there's nothing there but their imagination and their actions to sell it. And I really agree with you there. And so I, you know, there's just something about those small scenes of Star Wars, I think, that when you break it down, those are the moments that, especially as you've watched the saga as many times as you and I have, that start to stick with you more than maybe the big ones, you know?
Sure.
Because you can go to the big stuff. I mean,
right.
Tatooine Suns, you know, with Luke, or, you know, whatever. They're all there for you.
You know what? But I'm glad you said that, because there was a thing on social media, you know, in the lead up to The Force Awakens where, you know, somebody said, this is the scene that gets J.J. Abrams every time from Star Wars. And it's Luke looking out at the sunset. And it's like, yes, it's iconic. It's a brilliant scene. It's wonderful. But yeah, like, it's all of us. Like, there's nothing. And I'm not, again, I'm not saying this. I'm not taking a shot at Abrams. I'm not diminishing his feelings, anything like that. But that scene works for all of us. Like, I don't understand why the news treated it as, I mean, maybe this was just the clickbait nature of quote unquote news nowadays. But like, why they always treat it as a surprise at that moment would, you know, would resonate with somebody. Like, I want to hear Abrams's tiny moment, like you just gave me, of Obi-Wan selling the boga, or R2 coming out of the cloud. I want to hear Abrams's tiny moments. I want to hear his, you know, what it is in the margins that gets him. Like, you know, if you were to ask my dad, God rest his soul, like, what sold Star Wars to him, it was the cantina scene. He went back to that every single time, because that was my dad's personality. He loved and adored silliness. And like, he just, that completely, that's a tiny moment, is that first introduction to the cantina scene for my dad. That was what Star Wars was to him. That was the big thing. And so, you know, and so, yeah, we all love the sun's setting on Tatooine as Luke looks at him and the music swells. But what's the tiny thing that sells it to you? So, you
well,
know, that,
I have a quick question for you, because I think this would be fun. So, you know, we talked about the films, but, you know, one of the great things is that there are animated series now. And so I kind of wanted to ask you now, because I think it works for both. Do you have a small moment that you can remember from the Clone Wars or Rebels that sticks out to you that really kind of just sold it for you? Like, especially maybe with Clone Wars and Rebels, for the first time, like, something sold it for you.
It's a good question. I won't lie that the thing that that sticks with me because it sold me on the Clone Wars as a concept, and it was in the original film, the one that they released, well, movie really, because it was just four episodes repackaged, but in the movie that they released in the theaters, that I go back to, there's a moment where Anakin is standing on top of, a ledge or whatever, and he's about to jump into battle, and the clones behind him say, you know, what's the plan? And he's like, just follow me. And he just jumps off. That was the moment where the Clone Wars as a concept was sold to me, where I was like, oh yeah, that's it. That's what I'm looking for. Yep. And that, like, from that moment forward, the Clone Wars, like, they had, I was definitely going to be a weekly viewer. Because I, like, even though, you know, again, this is happening in the movie theater, I was like, this, if I'm going to see that, that is the show I'm going to watch. Mm-hmm. You got me.
Okay, I could go with an Obi-Wan moment, but I'm not going to, because
brave of
people
you.
Get tired of my Obi-Wan moments. But mine came from the original film. I will say, I remember seeing that in the theater thinking, this is the most Star Wars thing I've seen in years. It's so odd. Anyway, that's a whole nother episode. But the scene that sold it for me was when Anakin and Ahsoka had crashed the Twilight, and they had landed in this desert of Tatooine. She's carrying Stinky, and they're walking across the desert, and it's the twin suns as they're setting. That moment for me sold that they could do Star Wars in an animated style and still be Star Wars, because it referenced everything that you loved about the originals and the prequels without it betraying what it was, which was in the animated nature. It felt so picturesque. It felt just like the way that George would set scenes visually, and everything was perfect in that scene. And then, of course, in that scene is Obi-Wan. In that scene is Anakin and Ahsoka, and him not wanting to talk about coming from Tatooine.
Right.
And so all of that was the moment where I was like, okay, yep, I'm sold. This is going to be my jam. I love this show.
And you know what? Something I want to pick up on here as we're talking about this, in case people can't figure it out. Since this is our pilot episode, I think it's important for us to sort of lay this expectation out there. You're listening to two people who love it all.
Books and comics. I mean, video games.
So you are not going to come here and hear the tired prequel bashing that has become a mainstay of the fan base. You are not going to come here and hear people complaining about Hayden or complaining about CGI or anything like that. You're talking to two people who are sold, and we are unapologetic about it. We will never apologize for the fact that we love what Lucas did in 99, 2002, and 2005, and in the series, The Clone Wars, and those sorts of things. And it's not because we're blind fans. It's because we legitimately have a love for this. So if you're coming here looking for hate, we might touch on something every so often, something we don't like, something we want to critique. But that's not the type of place we're in. We're not going to be kicking anything. We're not going to be talking about how our film professor said that was a bad transition or something like that. That ain't going to happen here. Right, Matt?
No, you're absolutely right, John. And I am glad that you said that. In a world where fandoms are full of bickering and pointless debates about things that they don't like, that they'll never be able to change, or any of that kind of stuff. You know,
or Beastie Boys music and trailers.
We just want to be here to have a good time with something that obviously we love. We wouldn't be doing this. There's no way we could do a show where we talk about the minutiae, the silliness, the serious of Star Wars if it wasn't something that we genuinely got something out of and we enjoyed all of it, or at least the majority of it, which we enjoy all of it. So, you know, there will be things where we'll talk about where we're like, that doesn't work for us as well. But it's never to spread any hate. It's just our personal opinion about it. We're not asking you to convert to our way of thinking. We're just going to say, that's one area where I feel like if they'd done this, it would have done better. And that's just part of being, I think, a fun fan, because you can't like it all perfectly.
Yeah, right. None of the films are perfect. There are arguably maybe a handful of perfect films, at least half of them done by Alfred Hitchcock. And
one of them, Casablanca.
Yeah, Casablanca is a perfect film. You're absolutely
right. Yeah.
Yeah, that is perfect. There isn't anything to change in that. But again, you know, we are never going to go down. You know, what did Yoda say? Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
No. Fear leads to anger.
No, I was skipping
anger
the fear
leads
part.
To hate.
I was skipping the fear part because neither one of us is afraid of anything except for spiders and taxes. And those
don't count. That's true.
Because so far as I'm concerned, both of them are imaginary because I never pay attention to either one. But in the grand scheme of things, we're here to have a good time. We want you to have a good time. And we also invite you to, you know, as the show builds, as we gain ahead of steam, you know, if there's a topic you think we could hit on, let us know. Right, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that's a great way for us to stay connected with everybody listening to this show, because there'd be plenty of times where your ideas was going to be able to spur us on into a great conversation, and then we get to talk back to you on the fan. Then we get to talk back with you as the fan of the show, and we get to have the back and forth together. And so I think there's no better idea than you coming up with some topics that you want to hear talked about, because most likely, if you're a fan like us, we're going to want to talk about them too.
Now, the one thing I want to let everybody know is that if you don't participate and you let me continually work with Matthew to come up with topics, we're going to go in some very strange areas. Matt, I think you can vouch, after having seen some of the things I've written on my blog on occasion, that I ponder some bizarre things about Star Wars.
But that's okay. You know, yeah. I mean, I think that's what makes it fun. Like we said, it's going to be some silly, it's going to be some serious, and it's going to be some just good old fashioned fun. So, you know, grab your blue milk and get over here and have a good time with us. And I'm excited, John. I do think I want to ask you, because the show is it's new. So
yes.
Was there a moment besides Ahsoka coming down the ladder in the last episode of the first season of Rebels that sold that show to you? A small moment, maybe.
Wow. Rebels didn't sell me until Yoda appeared as sparkling lights. Mm. That was the moment that I started caring about the show Rebels. Before that, I could have taken or left it. I was kind of like meh, and that was the moment that sold me. But I still was skeptical. So I guess you could say that the moment that really got me was when Vader appeared in Siege of Lothal, and Kanan and Ezra faced him. And it was Vader demonstrating all sorts of badassery that was just like, oh, he's scary again. Oh, that's pretty cool. I like scary Vader coming back. Like, that's something I really dig.
Scary Vader. I love him.
He's best.
No, well, that's funny. That's really, really funny that you put it like that.
What sold you outside of Ahsoka?
Well, that's a tough thing, you know, because honestly, that was a huge, for me, it was a watershed moment when that happened.
Sure.
And I think it let me know that the show was going to be more than it had been that first season, because it's a very small show in the first season, and to me that was a little bit it was hard to get used to. It really was very hard to get used to. I think the thing that really got me, John, was the fact that they got Frank Oz back to do Yoda. And these are bigger moments, I think, for the show than the small moment. But, and then, like you said, and you so aptly pointed out and stole mine, was that Yoda showed up as those lights that we had seen in the end of Clone Wars with that Yoda arc where he goes to Dagobah, and Qui-Gon has shown up as those lights and guided Yoda through the Force to meet the priestesses. And I think all of that just turned out to be so wonderful. And the way that it all flows together to create a cohesive whole between, you know, the prequels, the Clone Wars, and Rebels, and then the way that helps us tie into the original trilogy, it started to become seamless at that point. And I think, like you, it's like that's the moment where I started caring about the characters. And then, of course, I think it cemented when Ahsoka walked down the ladder. And yeah. Everybody, I think, was like, what?
Yeah, well... Yeah, she was not expected. They did a really good job of keeping her hidden, and I think that that was really wise on their part, because it would have been so easy for them to make her Leia, and not having her be Leia and having it be Ahsoka was a hell of a sell. It was brilliant.
Ahsoka lives.
Always and forever.
At least in our hearts.
But I think that we've given everybody a pretty good taste here in our pilot episode, Matthew. I think we've given everybody a good look at what they can expect and sort of the depth of love and knowledge that we're going to be working with here. So this is our invitation to you, the world, to come and hang out with us. So, Matthew, where can people find us online?
Well, that's a great question, John. Because we're new, you can find us a few different places. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/aggressivenegotiations. We are also on Twitter. We are known as The Jedi Masters. You'll want to capitalize the T, the J, and the M in that to find us. So yes. We're The Jedi Masters. So that means you can ask The Jedi Masters questions on Twitter. So be sure to follow us there. And then, of course, John, what would a podcast be without its own website? You can find us at aggressivenegotiations.squarespace.com.
Yeah, and where else can they find you online, Matthew, if they want to reach out to you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm all over the place. You can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram at MRushing. I do some other podcasts on a network called Trek.fm. You can find that online at Trek.fm. I do the 602 Club there, where we talk about all things geeky that don't have anything to do with Star Trek. So movies and TV shows and things like that, from comics to we talk some Star Wars stuff over there. John, you and I have talked a lot of Star Wars there, where we go in depth about the films, walking through things like that, the books, the comics, that kind of stuff. You can also find me on Literary Treks, what I do with Dan Gunther, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also get the opportunity to interview the authors about their latest works. And I also do The Orb, which is the dedicated Deep Space Nine show on Trek FM with Christopher Jones, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. Now, John, I know that you have a ton of places that you are all over the interwebs, so let everybody know where the listeners can find you.
Well, if they're so inclined, they can find me. I'm Kessel Junkie on Twitter. You can find me also on the Trek FM network. I am doing a show called Commentary Trek Stars with Mike Schindler, where we examine the non-Trek work of Star Trek creators. And you can also find me on a podcast called Words with Nerds, which I co-host with my buddy Craig, where, we cover a lot of topics, a lot of strange topics over time. And but those are the three big places to find me. Well, Matthew, as with all things, I believe that I hear the waterfalls of Naboo calling.
You're right, John. It's time to close negotiations.